and welcome to another edition of Visions. With me, Yudeli Wickham Ashby. And today, I'm deeply honored to have in the studio with me, Rena Pierre Thomas from the Spice Isle, Grenada. Welcome to Visions, Rena.
Thank you for having me, Yudeli.
Okay. Rena, let's start by you sharing a little about yourself, because you're a young woman with a disability. So tell us a little more.
Well, growing up with a disability, it was okay in the beginning, I should say. Being the first of four, I was treated normal by my parents. Then when my siblings came along and I had the neighbors and their children around, because they grew with me, it was okay. You know, I was treated normal and we had fun, we played. But I realized that I was different when I started preschool. When I started school, I came out and I was excited and, you know, I was ready to go there. And what happened was that the day of school, when I wanted to play with everybody was, you know, they didn't want to play with me. You know, some children were even scared of me and I was wondering why, you know, and they started pointing at my hand and, you know, calling me names. And when I came home, I didn't want to go back to school. And when I told my parents, they tried to explain to me it was because, you know, I was born different and the other children didn't understand. But to me at that point, I didn't see myself as different because I was never treated that way prior. So that was kind of a shock for me. But things didn't get better. It got worse. You know, the children around me, they always teased me, always called me name, and it didn't just stop at preschool. It went to primary school, it went to high school. I mean, you could never get used to being called names. You could never get used to being, you know, look at different. And it wasn't just the students. You had adults. They treated me different. They too would look at me different. They too would even call me names, or if not call me names, but, you know, make certain comments, you know, that just would make me feel bad about myself and make me feel that I was not worth something growing up. So it was quite difficult, you know. And no matter what my parents would say or try to encourage me or tell me, you know, that everything would be okay, it's like my parents is my parents. They have to love me no matter what, you know. So it just felt over these years growing up that I could have never fit in. And it took a lot of time, effort, and understanding for me to reach where I am today, to love me for me and accept me for me.
Okay, so tell us, how did you do all that you did to come to the point of accepting and loving yourself and just dealing with the various comments and attitudes?
So I had an experience in primary school. I tried so much to fit in. And I always wanted to try to make friends or try to fit in with the rest of the kids. And at a point in time, I was not doing good in school. And no matter what my parents tried, I just wasn't focused because my focus was fitting in and not learning. My focus was on wanting to be like everybody else and not learning. And I remember I did an exam and it was so vivid that the teacher, after doing the exam, she called the other teachers and showed them my paper, and they were laughing. And I felt so bad that day, you know. They never really looked at me. They never really bothered with me until it was my second chance in CPE. It's CPE now, but before it was Common Entrance. It was my second chance in CPEA. And this specific teacher, his name is Mr. George, he took me in his class, and that was a class for the slower children. And every evening, he would keep me back and have a special class with me. And he would always encourage me. You're so brilliant. You can do better. You know, you can learn anything you want. And he would always have this one-on-one with me and always encourage me and always tell me or make me feel like I can be great. And that year I passed Common Entrance to go to secondary school. I got an award for the outstanding student in English and Science. And that is where I started to believe in myself. That is where I started to believe that I can do and be great. You
Wonderful.
Know, he started that back in.
Great, great. Okay, so after you completed secondary school, did you go straight to work? Did you go to continue your adult education?
Right. So after secondary school, I wanted to go to university. At that time, my parents couldn't afford to send me to university. So I wanted to work and save some money. And no matter where I applied for a job, I couldn't get a job. And it wasn't that I was qualified, but it's because persons think that I couldn't handle the job. And what made it obvious is that I would apply. I would have a phone conversation. They would be excited. But from the time I entered the interview, the expression on their face changed. Every time they would look at me, the questions they would ask, are you sure you can handle this job? Are you capable? You know, from the time they see me, they would not hire me. I wanted to be a doctor. I never wanted to be a journalist. And I remember feeling so depressed one day that I just called a radio station on a calling program and I just poured my heart out and spoke about how I was treated and how persons with disability was shone upon and that we were not given opportunities and stuff like that. And the host of the program said that, well, you know, maybe we can help you out. Maybe we can see what we can do, but we can't pay you. The radio station was really small. We couldn't pay you. So I decided I didn't care. I volunteered my time because I just wanted to be occupied. So I went in the radio station and I started there volunteering as a secretary. And the owner, he didn't used to really pay me. He just used to give me a little change to pay bus and stuff like that. And from there, I just developed. I started as a secretary and then I went into news. And I decided after a while, looking at how much influence somebody within the media have, I decided, you know what? I want to make a difference. This is a platform to make a difference in the media. I have to be at the forefront. I have to be in the light and I have to speak out. And if I make a career into this and be that person that, you know, is different from the rest and show that no matter what I look like or how I was born, as long as I make up my mind, I can do it, then maybe it can change the way people look at persons with disability. And I started from scratch. Again, I came from secretary volunteering to doing in the radio. Then I went into the newsroom. And once I went into the newsroom, I just fell in love with it because there were so much different stories. There were so much different ways I can tell the stories of people who needed to be heard. And I just branched off from there. After spending about 2 years with them, I got an opportunity to go into a program called the Imani program. And that is where I got a stipend. I was paid $700 a month. And I signed up and I went into full-blown media. And I just keep pushing. And when I came in, I got shunned upon still, you know. Persons wasn't sure if I was going to be media worthy, being in the light, what would people think? And I just keep working hard and pushing hard. And persons would say, I can't work at this time. I would say I'm available. And I just got an opportunity to show my talent and that I was capable of doing what anybody can do. And eventually persons around me just realized, you know what? We're going to give her an opportunity because she's quite capable. And then the program ended and they kept me full time in that station. And I stayed in that job for 2 years and I got an opportunity to go into television and I grabbed it. They always say your work speaks for you. So I did my best. I put out my best and I was given the opportunity to go into television and I'm still in television.
Fantastic.
That is where I'm at today.
Great, great. So, Rena, we are hearing that some of your experiences have been very tough and challenging. And that has helped to shape you into the beautiful, strong, resilient woman with disability that you are. What would you say is one of your most memorable moments working in media?
When I completed my associate degree in media, I think that was one of my most memorable moments. The fact that I couldn't leave my work and get my degree. And it was a challenge for me to do both because media is very liquid. It's a liquid job where it calls you in an instant and you don't know where you're going to be at what time and what's going to happen, something, a news break, and you have to leave and go and you're not sure. So that was a very difficult time for me to get to that point where I wanted to graduate. And it took me a while I had to take a break at a point in time. But when I completed my degree in journalism, it was memorable for me because I realized that I was there, I was in the media, but I felt like I wasn't making a difference to a person with disability. But when I graduated, 2 days after, one young lady came up to me and she had a disability. And she said, I saw you because the graduation was live. And she came up to me and she said, I look at you all the time and I saw you in your graduation. I was on the live and I must tell you that you are an inspiration to me. You encouraged me and I know that I can do anything. And because of you, I believe that I can do anything. And I felt like I was making a difference then. I felt like even if I wasn't seeing it, I was doing it, you know,
because
people were actually looking at me and they were actually, you know, seeing that whatever I can do, they can do it. And that was the point. Once I can do it, you can do it.
Okay, so Rena, you're not only in journalism, but you're also involved in the disaster management agency in Grenada. Tell us, how did you get involved in this and what difference has it made to you?
The National Disaster Management Agency is basically full of volunteers. And volunteerism is something that I love. But the main reason why I joined that specific agency is because during the time of disaster, I wanted to be an official that deals with persons with disability. Not everybody can deal with people with disability. Some people don't have patience. They don't understand how to deal with people with disability. And sometimes persons with disability, we forget about them. Especially when you're rushing and you're thinking, who should we help or what should we do when it comes to a disaster? So in my area, I have an idea as to every individual in my area who has a disability, whether it's mobile, whether it's physical, whether it's elderly and they're in that old age where they can't move that much. I have an idea as to who they are, where they live and what they need. So I volunteer with my local district so that when a disaster comes, I am the person that mobilize or help mobilize. How are we moving this person to disability? We organizing a vehicle. Do they have food? What do they need? What should we ensure that we have for them? If they have any illness, and would we need a wheelchair? You know, would we need blankets? These are the things that I really wanted to do when it comes to the agency, to be that person that would be responsible to help persons with disability during a disaster and ensure that they are safe after and before the disaster occurs, ensuring that they're in a shelter or that wherever they stay, it is able to protect them and that they're in a safe environment.
Do you think that having a disability is impacting and encouraging these people at risk to leave their homes, to go into a shelter, and really trust you as a volunteer?
Of course. What I know is that persons with disability click with persons with disability. So if you see me with a disability, you would have more tendency to trust me rather than to trust somebody who we say is quote-unquote able-bodied. You are more comfortable to speak to me. Sometimes some people with disability, they may need something or they may have an issue. And that able-bodied person doesn't understand. And because they don't understand, they become edgy. They would speak to you harsh, especially if you have a mental disability. Let's say somebody who has Down syndrome. I mean, they behave in a certain manner. And when you think that, you know, oh, why are they behaving that way? You get that they screaming at them or maybe acting in a way with them or what? Because, you know, they're rushing. They want to get this person out there to go to the shelter and you're taking the time or you're behaving in a manner they don't understand. Then the way they would react is not the way I would react, because I would understand. I would know. I would be aware as to what that person's disability is and how they would react. What are their behavior like? And how do we go about calming them? Or how do we go about getting them to move to the shelter? I have experienced it on more than one occasion.
Okay.
That person with disability tend to click with somebody else with disability.
Now, Rena, can you tell us what your experience was like with Hurricane Ivan and this recent hurricane Beryl?
Hurricane Ivan was terrible. I was a teenager then, and Hurricane Ivan destroyed our entire home, and we had to start from scratch. It devastated the entire island, both Grenada, Carrick, and Bintimatnik. At the time, we were at a shelter. Our home was not able to withstand that category of hurricane. We knew that because the homes constructed was not constructed to withstand the hurricane. Most of the home, I could say 90% of the homes were not constructed to withstand hurricane. So we went to a shelter and it was very scary for me because it was my first time experiencing a hurricane. Parts of the roof of the shelter, it was also gone, you know, so it was really scary. But Beryl was different, and I believe it's because most of Beryl didn't hit mainland Grenada. It hit Carrico and Petit Martinique and higher up the islands. But St. Patrick's and St. Mark's, the northern side of the country, got a hard hit. Where I live got a bit of it, but not the full blunt as St. Mark's, St. Patrick, and Carrico and Petit Martinique. And again, because of Ivan, the experience of Ivan, the homes that we constructed after was much more better in withstanding hurricane. It might not have been perfect. It might not be perfect today. But I can say now that 90% of the houses in Grenada, in mainland Grenada, withstand Beryl than Hurricane Ivan. I believe if it was a full blunt, yes, we would have lost more houses. But because most of the houses built after Ivan were either bomb shelter houses or had hurricane clips and was constructed more to withstand the hurricane, we learned from what Ivan did. We grew from it, and we did much better. I can say much better. Our country, the mainland, is recuperating better. A lot of the areas already have electricity back up and running. Water is a bit of an issue because of the dam and how the blockage and the falling of the trees would have damaged dams. So we're having a big issue with that still. But being able to recover as quickly as we're doing now on the mainland, compared to Ivan, we are doing quite well. Also, when it comes to relief, we had a lot of relief. Persons took the hurricane more serious and they were prepared more. They got their barrels filled with water and they had their food and stuff, you know, in the right places. A lot of people lost a lot of documents during Ivan. A lot of people was like, oh, hurricane is not going to come when God is a Grenadian. And they took no precaution. But I can tell you that when Beryl, we were on the hurricane watch, persons were battening their homes, ensuring that all their windows were all battled up, and they were preparing, ensuring that they had any hanging down trees, it was cut. I saw it personally, and persons who knew or they wasn't sure or comfortable that their homes would have been safe, they went to the shelter. Ivan, there was nothing like that. People decided to stay home. We had few people going to shelters and they were saying, oh, hurricane is not going to come. But they took it more serious this time.
Okay. So, Rena, we've heard quite a lot about your participation in the National Disaster Management Agency, as well as your work as a journalist. You're also a wife, and I know that many persons with disabilities are skeptical about getting involved in a long-term relationship or even getting married. What were your thoughts when your husband, Sean, approached you about getting involved? And what would you say to young people with disabilities about relationships?
Relationship is a whole different story when it comes to persons with disability. In a synopsis, in a relationship, especially somebody with a disability, you know that person is the one based on how they treat you. If you have an individual that wants to keep you home and hide you from the world, but yet wants to be in a relationship and don't value you, it makes no sense. I can say when me and my husband just met, he was not the kind of man I wanted. I never liked him. I didn't want to date him. I didn't want to be with him. But we were friends. And when we became friends, and then I got to know him and the way he treated me, that is what made me fall in love with Sean. Prior relationship, it was like, we're dating, but they don't want to be seen with me in public. Even if we go out, I would be walking for myself and they'll be walking either behind me or in front of me. So it was not like if they wanted people to know that we were together. They would hardly introduce me to friends. And even if they introduced me to anybody, it would not be like, this is my girlfriend or this is somebody I'm dating. It would be like, hi, this is Rena, my friend, or something like that. And most of the time, they don't stand up for me. So if somebody would say something like, why are you liming with a girl with that kind of disability? You would not say anything. You would not stand up for me. With my husband, it was totally different. My husband, we go out, he would hold my hand. He would kiss me anywhere. And at a point in time, in the beginning, I was uncomfortable because I never used to receive it. So when he started, I was shy, I was uncomfortable, and I didn't like it. But after growing to understand Sean and realizing how he treats me like a princess, how he shows the entire world that he loves me, and he don't care what anybody says, including family members, when we first dated and he started to introduce me as his girlfriend. And they were like, what are you doing with a girl like that? He stood up for me and he cussed them off and say, what's wrong with her? Nothing is wrong with her. There's nothing wrong with her. She's capable of doing anything. And I love her for who she is. She's a wonderful person. She has a good heart. And he stood up for me, no matter what anybody say. And when he did that, that just showed me that he really cared. He really loved me. He treated me different from all other relationships. And that's when I knew that he was the one. Because of the way he treated me, because of how much he valued me, and because of how he wanted to tell the whole wide world that he loves me. And he just did it. He didn't care.
Nice, nice. A real romantic story. Yes. Well, Rena, let's hear your guidance and advice for young people like yourselves and even younger people with disabilities in the Caribbean. What would you say to really encourage them in the moments they may be feeling lost and uncertain about the way forward?
Pray. Despite everything you pray, I say without God, there's nothing in life that you can overcome unless you have God with you. It's not going to be an easy road. It's going to be very difficult. Another important thing is, in order for someone to love you and accept you, you first have to love and accept yourself. It's a difficult road to understand that it's okay to be different. It's okay that you're born different. It's okay to recognize, yes, that I'm different. But it doesn't mean that you're not capable or able of doing the things that you want to do. If you have a dream, you work towards it. It may take you twice times working hard, but you can do it still. You can do it still. You just have to keep yourself focused and surround yourself with positive things, positive people, people who encourage you, people who motivate you, people who would help you along the way. This is the most important thing. And sometimes I know that you may think that family have no choice than to love you and you want to be accepted out there in the public, but sometimes it's okay not to be accepted by the world. It's okay that the world doesn't understand you. It's okay that the world doesn't see what you're able to do at the first instant. But once you work towards what you want and you show the world that, listen, I can do this, then you would see how fast people would see that you're able to do it. I would say my work speaks for me, because when everybody thought, can she really do it? I did it for free. I volunteered and showed them, listen, you can say what you want, but I know I'm able to do it. And once I did it and they saw that I was able to do it, that's an opportunity. They would open a door for you. And even if they open a door for you, you have to know what you're worth, because sometimes people open a door for you to exploit you. And that is where you also have to put down your foot and be able to say, listen to me, I am worth more than this. And I need to be able to be treated like everybody else and given what I deserve because I work hard for it. Because a door opens, sometimes people tend to take advantage of you. And we need to be able to stand up for ourselves and speak out and say, no, I need to get what I deserve.
Well, Rena, it truly has been a pleasure chatting with you yet again. And I must greet your parents, Devon and Pauline Augustine. There are excellent, excellent parents in helping to guide you, strengthen you, and as you said, stand up for you and your other siblings. So I want to say thank you, and I truly appreciate you and your candidness in sharing today.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope that my story and all that I said would have at least given somebody out there with a disability, you know, that strength and that positive feeling that they can do and be anything they want to be, motivate them, you know, to push towards their dreams and to be the person, you know, they really want to be. It's not easy. It's not going to be easy, but we can make it.
Of course.
We can do anything we want. It doesn't matter what our disability is. We can do anything we make our mind up to be.
Well, thanks again. And hopefully in the near future, we'll chat again.
Of course. Of course.
You have been listening to Visions with me, Yudalee Wickham Ashby, and my very special guest, Rena Pierre Thomas. So until next week, remember you can reach me on 1-246-269-9660 or 1-246-430-7300. You can email me on visionsbarbados@gmail.com. That is visionsbarbados@gmail.com. And you can listen to this and past episodes by going to the VOP929.com website. So until next week, do love yourself and love your neighbor as you love yourself. Until then,